Hi, I'm Jenny, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon Family Groups. Can you hear me now? You know, I just was out to Colorado to the Fellowship of the Spirit, and I said I had discovered another fear, and that was of microphones, and God just keeps putting them in my face. So, thank you. And with that, where do I begin? I came into Al-Anon. I was married 3 months, and that was in 1974. I just celebrated 30 years in Al-Anon, one day at a time. Don't clap. And I have to say it's been one hell of a ride. Just before speaking, you know, I got familiar again with my Al-Anon disease, which is the bathroom, running to the bathroom, and brought back a lot of memories to me. When I finally got here, I have to say that I was just dead. I have to say that I was spiritually dead. I met my husband. I'll give you a little background. I'm the oldest of 6 children. My father is an alcoholic, still active. I was the oldest, and I didn't know that there was alcoholism in my family. I remember my father not being home, and what my memories were of my mother always crying, and all of us kids consoling her. So that was like my memories of my childhood. Unbeknownst to me that we were living with alcoholism, because I never saw my father on the floor. I didn't know what the problem was, but there was a big problem in my house. So I went off on my merry way, and I went through my teens. I'm a child of the 60s, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I went out and I partied a lot. And I drank, and I did drugs, and I did all those things, but I was able to put those things down. In my travels, I decided to get married, and after being married for about 5 months, I woke up, I looked at him, and I said, I don't want to be married anymore. Why did I ever get married? And I remember looking back, and I remember I had this huge resentment against my mother when I did my inventory. And I blame my mother for my decisions, because my family thought, coming from an Italian family, that you get married. You know, we didn't go to college because we were just going to get married and somebody was going to take care of us. And so it was her fault that I got married. And then I decided that I was going to get out of this marriage, and I did. And, you know, not to get ahead of myself, but I remember always thinking how unimportant I was, how I didn't matter. And I don't really know where that came from, but as my memories go back, that's the way I thought about myself. Always a zero, a nothing. And I carried that belief system into relationships that I had, and I met my current husband that I have been with for 30 years, and we worked together, and this is really a true story. I was celebrating my birthday, and we were in a bar, and our eyes connected across the room, and literally, and I just thought that he looked so sad and so alone, and I moseyed over to him. And what a journey. Watch what you pray for. So, you know, there was no lies. There was no deceit. My husband drank. He didn't hide it from me. When I went into Al-Anon and I would hear people share, I didn't know my husband drank. Well, I did. I always knew he drank because when we would go to the bar, someone mentioned it last night, or this morning, Jerry, good friend of mine, how his wife sips it and stirs it. And that's me. I'm that person. I have a drink and I sip it and I stir it and then I leave it. And he never left it. I would say, I think it's time that we have to go. And he would say, after this one. And then I'd be waiting, you know, and waiting and waiting. And I would be getting angrier and angrier. And this was from the get-go. This wasn't that we had a 6-month relationship, a year relationship. This was from day one. It was a problem for me. It was never a problem for him. He knew where he was going. And I remember, and I would think, there must be like some glue on this bar stool. There's something, he can't get off of it. And from the get-go, we fought. It was like, I wanted to leave, and he wanted to stay. And that's the way it went. And I remember this terrible, hopeless feeling, this doom, this cloud. I can't even describe it. It was this depression of I couldn't get away from it. I couldn't live. I couldn't die. I couldn't stay. I couldn't go. I couldn't do anything but go along with this insanity. And I remember that I'm not going to get into too much drama, but I think I like to share that for anybody who's new, because it's great to stand up here and talk about how wonderful this program is and all the miracles. But, you know, there was someone else before, and I need to share that. And what was happening to me was that I was becoming another person. I was becoming isolated. I was becoming depressed and isolated. I couldn't eat. Sometimes I think I'd like some of that back now so I can lose a little weight. But I literally could not get the food down my throat. I would start to gag. You talk about the physical part of this disease for an Al-Anon. It was the stomach pains, it was the nausea, it was the headaches, it was all that, the physical part of the Al-Anon person. And I remember, this was a typical day for us, and this is me, the non-alcoholic who don't drink. Right after meeting him, we needed license plates, and we were down in Brooklyn, and he said to me, I need to get some license plates, could you watch out for the cops? So I'm sitting in the car, and I'm keeping Chicky as he's unscrewing somebody's license plate. Okay. This is the person who doesn't drink, and then I think that's okay, all right? Another time, we're going through the tunnel, and we're both working in the World Trade Center, and we get dressed up for work, and my husband has a broken windshield, no registration, no license, and we're going through the tunnel, and there are police there waving us down. And he's, screw this, he's going through the tunnel, and they're chasing after us, right? We get out the other side, they're waiting for us. This is going to work in the morning. So I'm screaming, I'm crying, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to kill us. They're taking their guns out. Okay, we escape from them. We pull into a garage, and we get out, and I say, okay, what time are you going to pick me up tonight? Okay. And then I say, let's not take the tunnel. Let's take the bridge. Okay. This is a true story. Okay. And I go off to work. And then we meet and we take the bridge home. I mean, you know, and it is funny right now. And you know, looking back, it wasn't funny then. It really, really wasn't funny. But I remember that a lot of those episodes, and there was so much more drama. But those are two that really stick out in my mind, and maybe one more, and then I'm going to move on. There was a time that I was a few months pregnant, and we're driving, and my husband is in a blackout, and my mother-in-law is in the car with us, and he's going down the one-way street, and here comes a poor guy pulling out of a car wash. Crashed into him. And then he's speeding with us, me and his mother, down a one-way street trying to get away. And we just jump out of the car. We're screaming like crazy people. He puts the car in the garage, puts the door down, and says to the guy, fix it. Me and her go home. He brings the car back. He gets it all painted, fixed. Nobody knows anything. And then we had this little cat. Remember those heads that used to go up and down in the back seat? And I'd say to him when the car's fixed, you know what? You better take that head thing off the back in case they remember that. You know, I mean, this was my thinking. This is, you know, my best thinking at that time. And, okay, enough of the stories. But I'll tell you something. Looking back at my life, I realized how sick I was and for so many years that I had blamed people for my circumstances, and because I had a father who was a drunk, and because we didn't have money, and because we lived in an apartment building, and we didn't have our own house, and yada, yada, yada. And I remember that I was sitting in my kitchen actually thinking about taking my life one day, and actually it was the day of my birthday, and I couldn't believe, and I thought, how did I get from here to there? What had happened to me? I thought I was an outgoing person. I always had a lot of friends. And I became this lone wolf. Believe me when I tell you, lone wolf. I stopped making phone calls. I stopped family visits. I stopped everything. And as I sat in my kitchen, I saw this commercial on TV. And the commercial said, do you know someone who has a drinking problem? Do you see what it's doing to them, but can you see what it's doing to you? And I'll tell you something. I looked at that woman in the commercial, and that was me. She was haggard. She was tired. She was crying, and I identified with that person. And there was a phone number, and I called the phone number, and I went to Al-Anon. And I went to my first meeting, and I don't even remember how I got there, but I know it was in Brooklyn on Tuesday afternoon at St. Jacoby. And I walked in, and all I could do was cry, and all I could think about is I can't live and I can't die. And I don't even drink, but I can't live and I can't die. And what a terrible place to be when you can't live and you can't die. I couldn't leave and I couldn't stay. And it's so they sat me, I was crying, and I said, yeah, you know, all the drama, and I said, you know, I'm not here from anybody but myself, because I'm one Al-Anon that went into Al-Anon for myself, not to get the alcoholic sober. And actually, I really didn't, there was nowhere else to go, because I had gone to a priest, I had gone to therapy, I had taken medications. So I go, and I go to my Al-Anon meeting, and I say, I just want to know how to get a divorce. I don't want to be with him anymore. And an old-timer says, you know, you need to sit down, and you need to listen. And from that moment on, what had happened to me was that I was one of these Al-Anons that you said, you know, get a sponsor. Okay, get a sponsor. Use the phone. Okay, go to meetings. Back then, we could smoke at the meetings, clean ashtrays. I did all that. And I remember after, you know, I was going to Al-Anon for a while, I ran home to my husband, and I said, I know what your problem is. You're an alcoholic. Needless to say, he wasn't very happy about hearing that. So he said, I had a friend of mine, and, you know, because Al-Anon people think they're going crazy. They think that, they think one way, and then by the time they talk to an alcoholic, they're like, oh, God, maybe I could be wrong. So I got, I got this calendar that I used to put every day D. Each day was a D on the day, and that was for drunk. So I would remember that I wrote it, that he was drunk on those days, so I could prove it to him. So I remember I had opened the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my husband was drunk on the bed, and I sat next to him, and I said, I opened it to how it works. 30 years ago, I didn't even know about the book. I just saw the book, and I opened it, and I started reading him the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous at the edge of the bed and saying, you can do this. I know you can do this. You know, again, not even thinking about what was happening to me, because it was still all about, if he gets better, then I will be okay. That's the way I lived. If he gets better, then my whole life is going to be okay. I'm going to have the family that I never had. So I go to Al-Anon, and I'm hearing about, you know, steps and slogans, and forget the steps. I'm like, oh, no, all right, forget them. They're for other people. I'll just do the slogans. So I got these big signs. I put them all over my kitchen. Live and let live, let go and let God. You know, when he was out there drinking, he'd come home. What's all this stuff? And because I was so sick that I had to be reminded every second of the day. Every second of the day to halt, to stop, to think. That's how much I had been affected. And I remember my sponsor telling me, I had asked her this question. I said, when am I going to get better? And she says, when you stop talking about him and when you start talking about you. And you know what? If you're an Al-Anon and you're diseased, you don't want to talk about you. You want to talk about anything else but you. And I remember that I had stayed in Al-Anon for 21 years, and I had never done a fourth step. I had stayed in Al-Anon for 21 years and stayed in step one. Because there was no one more powerful than me. I didn't have a vehicle to get there. I looked at the steps off the wall, and I said, okay, I can do that. Okay, turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I could do that. Inventory, well, I don't know if I can do that. And I never did the steps of the program because I didn't know how. And I stayed that way for 21 years in Al-Anon. And I sponsored people in Al-Anon. And you know what? When they came up to me and they said to me, you know, Ginny, I think it's time I do a fourth step. And I'd say to them, you're not ready. You're not ready. You know why? Because I really didn't have a real answer for them. I had no answer, no vehicle. I had to interpret the steps. And you know what? Please don't misunderstand me. This is not anything about people who came before me, because I know today they absolutely did the very best with what they had. But then what happened? I did that, and I didn't know what I didn't know. So after 21 years, I'll speed this up, of me sitting at meetings, looking good, trying to sound good, trying to say what I think that you needed to hear, okay? Yes, God, you know, I have God. Yes, I admit my wrongs, yada, yada, yada. And I was this guru. I was the guru. I had all this time, and people looked up to me. How am I going to tell them that I don't know? I can't tell them I don't know, because my pride and my ego won't let me tell them I don't know. So, my husband, I put him in jail, this Al-Anon, and while he was in the jail cell, I was attending an Al-Anon Sunday afternoon meeting, and this double winner, a very good friend of mine in AA and Al-Anon. She was chasing me around this meeting. She said, Ginny, you got to give Tom this number. I said, oh, no, this is Al-Anon. We don't get involved with alcoholics. I am not giving. He's on his own. 21 years. You know, I'm detached. So she's following me in the kitchen. She's following me around the rooms. You got it. I know this guy, Larry. He's going to help Tom. And I said, so she drives me home, to make a long story short. And she said, I'm going up my house. And she said, Ginny, you forgot the phone number. I said, oh, let me just shut her up. Okay, I'll give it to him. He had gotten out of jail. So I didn't give it to him. So the next day, she picks me up again because I'm taking her around to meetings. She said, did you ever give him that number? I said, oh, I better do it. I went up. I said, here, it's your choice. If you want to use it, fine. If not, I really don't give a shit. You can tell how untreated I was. So what happened next is, all of a sudden now, my husband is doing really well in AA. He's carrying this book around with him. And I'm looking at him very strangely because, you see, my husband had nearly 10 years and picked up. He was an untreated alcoholic, and he was just white-knuckling it, and he was worse than ever. And I was going out on saying, gee, how am I going to complain? He's not drinking. Oh, God forbid I should complain about someone who's not drinking. And here's some poor Al-Anon women sitting there just waiting for that happy day to arrive. And I don't want to break their bubble. So I'm like, this is too good to be true. I'm waiting for that shoe to fall because I've had a history with this man for years that I in and out. And I just didn't believe any of it. But all of a sudden, he was nice to me. He was concerned. He would call me up in the day and ask me how my day was going. I'm like, don't believe it. Just don't believe it. If you are a family member, it takes a long time for you to believe it. And he said, Ginny, one night, he's doing this work about 6 months. You got to look at this book. I said, oh, no. It's not conference-approved literature. I'm in Al-Anon 21 years. I'm not the screw up here. Now, all of a sudden, you found this book, and now you're going to tell me? I don't think so. That's the truth. But you know what started to happen? It started to pique my interest because 1 month went to 2 to 3 to 6 to 8, and I'm thinking, gee, he's still nice. This stuff, there must be something to what he's doing. It piqued my interest. But I was still, you know, with my guard up and my attitude and the 21 years, and I am the Al-Anon, and I am the great one, and you are the screw-up. All in my head, you see, because I never gave my husband credit, you know, for what he did. I still treated my husband like an active alcoholic when he was doing the right thing. Because I was an untreated Al-Anon. So all of a sudden now, I say, you know, I think I want to look at that book. So he said, there's really good stuff in here. I said, well, it's not Al-Anon approved literature, but I'll look at it. And I have to tell you, it's been one hell of a journey, and that was 9 years ago. And I go to a conference in Colorado. And I'll tell you, I met a bunch of other Al-Anons out there that are doing the deal. And it just goes to show, you got to tell you a little story about how what happened to me with this doing the deal stuff. Is that there was a young girl in Al-Anon, okay, who had the courage to share this with me. And she was 20-something years old. And here I am again, 40-something years old, in Al-Anon 21 years, sitting across from this kid who has 3 years of Al-Anon, and she's helping me through the steps. Because you know what? I didn't care. Time don't matter. It doesn't matter. And guess what? Then I had the book. I had it. And I'm like, okay, I think I'm just going to keep this to myself. Because how am I going to go and talk down on people about this stuff? You know, it's like, don't drink and go to meetings. Now it's like, oh, this is Al-Anon. I can't do this. Oh, no. What are people going to think about me? So one by one, my higher power sent me people. And a fellowship grew up on Staten Island, New York. And we went to each other's homes, and we did it. We did the deal. And you know, it was 21 years I used to sit in meetings and say, you know what? I wish I had what that man had. I wish I could believe as he believed. And you know, everybody says, gee, I don't exactly know what did it for me, but I do. When I got to the chapter on We Agnostics, I cannot begin to tell you how my life changed. 21 years sitting in Al-Anon with no higher power. Don't get me wrong. The 21 years, there were good moments. I did have relief. It wasn't all bad, but there was still something deep down within that I couldn't say at a meeting. It's like, I'm sitting here and I don't believe it, but I am the guru. Who am I going to tell? And so I got this group together, and I thought I'm going to keep this to myself, my image. And God sent them. And out of that group of people who went through the steps as it's outlined in the big book, I got a sponsor who is a very good friend of mine before then. And she got to such a level, and I said to her, you know, I need a sponsor. Forget about the 30 years and all that, because I need to be accountable. I cannot give this work away and take people through the work and not have a sponsor myself and tell them to have a sponsor. Hello. And I went through, and it was amazing because, you see, in Al-Anon, I would say this to myself, okay, they told me to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, of my understanding. Oh, well, the God of my understanding was a terrorizer to me. And it was such a breath of fresh air to find out that I could begin at a simpler level, that I could get my own conception, and I could work from that point on. And that's what I did. And then I was just doing the thing like the yo-yo thing. Here, God, take it, back and forth, take it. And then 5 minutes later, here I am again. What happened? I'm not getting it. I'm not getting it. What's wrong with me? I'm sitting in the rooms for 21 years and I don't get this. There must be something defective about me. So then I go into four. Oh, boy. And here I am 21 years in Al-Anon with 75 people on my list. I'm like, oh, 75 people. And then forget each one of them what they had. And I really did follow the directions. I did the fourth, and it was a wonderful experience for me. Fifth, I think that I really went in. I had a lot of fear in five because, you see, I could admit to myself, to God, but it was that other thing, to another human being. That was what, you know, what are they going to think about me? What the heck? Oh, I'm this awful person. Well, I got through that one, and I was still loved unconditionally, and what a blessing that was. And then in the sixth step, you know, I made two lists, things that were objectionable to me and things that I still cling to. I said, I can't believe I did all this work, and I'm still clinging to stuff, And then I did that, and then I did the seven-step prayer, and then I went on to do my eight-step list. And this is a real kicker. You know, I did, when I did, I'm sorry, let me back up. In the fourth step, when I did my initial list, guess who I left off the list? My husband. I wrote the list, and I'm like, oh, my God, I forgot Tom. I'll tell you, I had to squeeze him in. But I'll tell you something, it really, really showed me something. It really showed me how much pain I was in, and not all of it was about him. It was really about me. And then guess what happened? I went into 9, and then I balked. You see, because when I was 18 years old, I'm a famous bank robber. When I was 18 years old, I worked as a bank teller, and I had this friend of mine who would come in, and she would give me $10, and I would give her change for $20. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm ever going to do this. I can't go to the bank, you know. What am I going to say after all these years, you know? They may lock me up. Then I started, well, it may affect my husband. Yeah. You look for the loopholes. You look for those little loopholes. And, you know, I started to balk. You know, and here I am taking people through, and I did a lot of 9. But I really believe those promises do not materialize for me if I do not work for them. And I rested on my laurels. And this year, particularly, I rested on my laurels because I have a 25-year-old son who's a juvenile diabetic who is losing his sight. And so me and my husband just took, like, a little sabbatical, you know. And our whole focus went on this one child of ours. And we plunged, well, I'll speak for myself, I plunged into darkness. But what I didn't do was that I didn't stop working with others. And I didn't stop going to meetings. But you know what? I didn't do any nightly review. And I didn't do what works for me, the way it's outlined. Because this Al-Anon is either all right or I'm all wrong. I'm either never going to apologize to you or I'm always apologizing to you. You know, I'm either leaving, I'm either staying. I can never get to that middle ground. So for me, what works is that I need to put it on the paper. And I said it in Colorado last week. If I step on your foot, I will apologize right here and right now. But anything else when it comes to relationships or children or family matters, this Al-Anon, I need to follow the directions because I can justify and rationalize every single thing I do, even today, left to my own devices. I don't know. I think my time is my time up? Okay. I'd like to say that I love this program. Yesterday, we buried my mother-in-law. And, you know, we have family at home. They said, where you going? He says, we got to go to a conference, you know, because this is where I need to do the deal. This is where I need to share my experience, strength, and hope. I know today for me, I'm back on track, thank God. I am in a fourth step again. I am one of the Al-Anons who for me, going through the steps one time does not work for me. Does not work for me because I realize for me, there's been layers upon layers of my life that, and believe me, a lot of that past stuff is gone. I was amazed before I was halfway through. And, you know, I was the tornado roaring through the lives of others. I was the person playing God. I was telling you, you see that powerlessness over alcohol? See, I was powerless over what someone else did with alcohol. But I didn't know that. I really believed until I looked at my fourth step. You know, where it says in the book, you know, even when trying to be kind, am I still not a self-seeker? You know, oh, I only just want the best for us, you know. I want us to be a family, you know, whatever you say and whatever you do, you know. And I really believed that at the time, you know, until I saw my truth. And my belief system today is so different. It is so, so different. I know I've rambled on for quite a bit. I have to say that I always ask God to help me, you know, speak the words that I'm supposed to. I always do this thing in my head. I still can't help it. What I'm going to say, how I'm going to say it, and how I'm going to look. You know, and none of it ever really works out that way. You know, you just come up and you really ask God to let it, whatever His will is for me today, you know. And, you know, when I came in and I thought really I was an atheist, but I really found out that I was an agnostic. And when I got into that chapter of We Agnostics, here I go again with that chapter, I have never, ever been the same. Even when my son got diagnosed, you know, and that was a pretty tough go. You know, my first thing would be, God, why are you doing this to me? And you want to know something? I didn't do that. I didn't do that. Everything was God's fault, or my mother's fault, or my father's fault, everybody's fault. And all it was disease. And the family is very, very affected by the disease. And they need treatment. And they need steps in their lives. And I may not, you know, I had a few Al-Anon friends that died. And they didn't drink and they leaped out a window. You know why? Because the pain got so great. Today I have a solution. I don't do it perfectly. I want to leave all of you with this. I always say that I found that when I got that little vague voice in the back of my head to go to that phone and to dial that number, Todd, it has given me a life that I could have never imagined. And it's not pain-free, you know? And I like to end with this, that I always say that God brought me to Al-Anon. And then Al-Anon brought me back to God. Thank you.